Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the silly O? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Quicken Loans Studios. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Coming up this hour, it's Trash Tuesday. So who or what are you trashing? Sounds like Pete the Body Bilotti has a real doozy on hand. So we'll do our trashes coming up at 40 minutes past the hour. I really want to vent about my trash as well. So stick around, Trash Tuesday, 40 minutes past the hour. We'll read yours throughout the hour and next hour as well. Remember, you can always watch the show at watchda.com. Also, the great Dan Silverman on the simulcast today, running episodes of Nomad during commercial break, my digital travel series available on YouTube. And the most recent edition was Boise State Football. This week, we're going to release all the things we ate while out there, and that was a real special moment. So look for that this week. Subscribe to the Nomad channel on YouTube. Just search my name in Nomad, and that way you'll get notifications throughout the season, season number 3, when brand new episodes are up. Last night, the New York Giants did something very seemingly counterintuitive, which was down 14 points. Going for 2 when they were down 8 and could have been down 7. Last night, late in that game in the fourth quarter, they finally break through for their first touchdown of the game. And at that point in time, the Giants trailed by 2 scores. This made it 20-12 after the Giants touchdown. And after Saquon Barkley's 2-yard running touchdown, they could have kicked the field goal to make it 20-13. You're down 7. Instead, they go for it, 2-point conversion, and it's incomplete. Actually, Eli hit Odell, corner of the end zone in the hands, but Odell could not corral it. People went crazy, including the broadcast team last night. Why would Pat Shurmur go for it? When you're still down by a full touchdown, don't go for 2 until you have to go for 2. If you get a stop and you get another touchdown, now you've got to convert the 2-point conversion just to get the tie. So instead of being down 7, you're now down 8. Didn't ultimately matter because the Falcons came down the field and kicked that 56-yard field goal. But many people couldn't understand and are still torching Pat Shurmur on why you would go for 2 there.
I just felt like, and you know, we've discussed, you know, internally the math on that. I felt like we had a good play, and I liked our 2-point play selections, and we just didn't quite get it done. You increase your chances by 50% if you go for it and make it there. So that's what you do. Because then if we score a touchdown, we just kick the extra point and win. And I felt good about the 2-point play. You guys saw that. I think we got the ball in there, right? And we just didn't connect on it.
So people say, why would you go for 2 there? Broadcast team melts down. They can't believe they would do it. Here's what I found ironic last night. Booger McFarland, who I largely like, excoriates Pat Shurmur for going for it there. But then as Dan Quinn tells the Falcons to line up for a 56-yard field goal and it goes in, he yells, "I love gutsy play calling. I love gutsy." Pat Shurmur is aggressive going for 2. You hate it. Dan Quinn goes for three in a 56-yard field goal, which if you miss it, gives the Giants decent field position, and he loves it. That, to me, is hypocritical. Aggressive is aggressive in that moment. One worked, one did not. Here's the thing. Originally, I also questioned it, saying, okay, why would you make yourself down eight instead of down seven? Why would you go for two there? And I looked more into it. Doug Peterson and the Eagles had done this recently, and this is now a new math in the NFL. I initially thought it was, I didn't think it was stupid, I just didn't understand it. And then I looked deeper into it and realized it makes sense. So, if you last night thought it was the stupidest thing ever, and you hate the analytics community, and you've never seen a coach do it, back off that spot for just a moment, knowing that I also didn't understand it and then read into it and bought it, okay? Just open up your mind a little bit. Here's the analytics, and I'll try to simplify this as much as possible because if you go through too many numbers and too many stats, your eyes are going to glaze over. It's going to be too hard to follow. But here's the deal. The odds of making an extra point are about 95%. It's almost a gimme. We know it's not a gimme, but it's almost a gimme, 95%. The odds of making a two-point conversion is 50%. Arguably, it's like 48.9 or something, but I'm going to make this number as easy as possible. 50% the odds to make a two-pointer, 95% to make an extra point. When you're down two touchdowns, this is the new math in football. Down two touchdowns late, you know you've got to get two touchdowns, and thus, you've got to get two extra points. Somehow you've got to get to 14 points. This is, again, when you're down 14. What you're doing there, if by going for it with a two-point conversion after you score the first touchdown, is saying, I've got about a 50-50 shot at making a two-point conversion here. And if I don't make it, I've got a 50-50 shot at making the two-point conversion on the second touchdown. So I'm basically saying, to get to 14 points, either I take the two extra points or I've got two 50-50 shots at getting to 14. Right? Now, some of you would say, well, DA, you take the 95% sure thing extra point. That way you don't have to take two 50-50 shots. But the odds would say two 50-50 shots, you'll make one of those two-pointers. And if you make the first two-pointer, now you set yourself up for the win. That's where the math and the odds of the analytics come in. If you make that first two-pointer, if the Giants have Odell Beckham corral that, now they're down six, and if they get a stop and they come back down the field and score a touchdown, now you kick the extra point and you win. You know you've got to get two touchdowns anyway. So you are betting on, can I make the first two-point conversion to then set myself up for a victory? If I don't, I got to go 50-50 shot again at getting the second two-point conversion, which would have been the same as just kicking the two extra points. That's the analytics there. And when you really dig into it, that makes sense. It gives you a breathing shot to win because the odds are what most coaches say is, if I go for it twice with a two-point conversion, the odds say I'll make it one out of the two times. If I make it one out of the two times on the first try, I set myself up for a win. If I don't, I just got to make sure that second time, hopefully, is the one out of two that gets me to 14 points anyway. It goes against convention and what we used to believe about football. But all of these things, breaking down the numbers and the odds, is actually helping us as football fans. Because coaches are no longer playing by the conservative playbook. Analytics in football is helping open up the game. It's why Frank Reich went for it. It's why Mike Vrabel went for two at the goal line the other day. It does not always work in your favor. It is why Bill Belichick years ago went for it on 4th-and-2 against the Colts and Peyton Manning. It's because the deeper you dig into analytics, the more you realize not punting, going for it on 4th down, going for 2-point conversions is actually statistically in your favor. Coaching aggressively in football is in your favor because there's a limited amount of possessions. There's a limited amount of scoring opportunities. And with the way that sophisticated offenses run now, the way that passing works now, odds are always in the offense's favor, always. It's not 1935. It's not 1955. It's not even 1975. In 2018, the odds are always in the offense's favor, always. So going for it, not punting, being aggressive, going for 2-point conversions, now makes more sense than ever. Look, I'm not telling every coach out there to never punt. I'm not telling every coach out there to always throw on 4th-and-long. I'm not saying every 2-point conversion you've got to go for because sometimes chasing points is silly. But numbers are telling the coaches it makes more sense than ever to be aggressive, and that's good for us. I applaud that. I want less ties. I want less punts. I want less conventional wisdom. It's better for me as a viewer. I think Pat Shurmur was right last night. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Twitter DA on CBS. And really, the sin of last night is simply that Jason Witten, Joe Tessitore, and Booger McFarland had no idea this was even a concept in coaching when they really should. If you're one of the top, I shouldn't say best because they're not, but one of the top broadcast teams just in terms of what games you're on, you should at least be open to having that discussion of why Shurmur tried that. Instead, it was just back to the old school. How could you do that? It's so stupid. That's a dumb play, yada, yada, yada. At least describe the thinking behind it. This is not something that Pat Shurmur came up with on the sideline suddenly in the middle of the fourth quarter. This is something that Doug Peterson just did and coaches began doing last season as well. When we come back here on the show, a little Trash Tuesday for you. We slid it up a little earlier because Pete Thamel's now going to join us later on in the hour. So Trash Tuesday next, DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Yeah.
We are the glitch in the simulation.
And I'm trashing the rooster that wakes me up in the morning. Keeps coming in my yard. All these chickens keep coming in my yard.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Trash Tuesday here, boys and girls. Thanks for being with us. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Remember to listen to us across this wonderful CBS Sports Radio network and all of our great local stations and local affiliates. Also, you can check us out on SiriusXM Channel 206, The DA Show, and the rest of CBS Sports Radio every day, 24-7, SiriusXM Channel 206. And CBS's Super Bowl season continues Sunday with coast-to-coast collisions. Cleveland and Pittsburgh clash in an AFC North showdown. The Jets fly to Chicago to face the Bears. Denver and Kansas City duke it out in an AFC West matchup. Baltimore battles the Panthers in Carolina, and the Colts take on the Raiders in Oakland. The day kicks off with the NFL today at 12 Eastern, 9 Pacific on CBS. Jimmy tweets, DA, the factor you're not taking into account for Pat Shurmur's 2-point conversion attempt last night. The math is bad if your team sucks. Fair. But let me also defend it this way. If your team sucks like the Giants and you're down by 14, do you trust them to get 3 scores then? Because you can score a touchdown and kick the extra point like so many of you people want. So you're down 7. Then you're assuming they're going to get the football back, have stopped the Falcons, get another score and extra point. And now you're tied. Then you go to overtime and you assume they're going to score again. In fact, by admitting you're sucking, playing for 2 touchdowns and a 2-point conversion means
you know the odds are you're not going to stop them multiple times and score three times. If you admit the Giants suck, the idea is they ain't getting back down there again. So get the two-point conversion now and cross your fingers you might get one more score because you aren't going to get two more scores. Know what I'm saying? Time now for your Trash Tuesday.
So, what's eating you?
People that get in the left lane and drive the speed limit.
I gotta trash the NFL, man.
Trash my ex-girlfriend.
You want me to trash that?
Trash Tuesday, my favorite day of the week, not for nothing.
Time to vent. We take it out like the trash. It's Trash Tuesday.
All right, Andrew Bogus, lead us off. Who are you trashing?
DA, don't know his name or her name or his name, but it's becoming an epidemic on mass transit here in New York City, whether it's the subway, it's the railroad in from Long Island. People have decided that wearing headphones are no longer necessary and are playing a video game, watching a video, listening to music out in the open for all of us to hear. Sometimes it's not the worst thing in the world. This morning at 4:20 Eastern time, watching something that involved cursing and F-bombs and this and that.
Oh my.
Absolutely unnecessary. Put on your headphones and then get out.
Well, and this is also not just a mass transit problem. This is a beach. This is a park.
Yeah.
This is a lake. This
it's
is a city bus.
Newsroom problem here too sometimes.
This is a world thing right now. People playing loud music. I would imagine back in the 80s when boomboxes were in, this was a problem then too. Listening to other people's music.
Yeah. But on a train, you need headphones, no matter what. It's not an apples to apples beach park like that I can deal with. On a railroad train, on a subway, on a bus, walking down the streets of Manhattan or any other metropolis, you need headphones.
Beep, beep. Sanitation just arrived.
Get them out.
Andrew Kaplan has slid over to the executive producer chair these last 2 days from the simulcast. Cap is usually at watchda.com, but Mraz down in Atlanta getting lit, smashing his face full of drunken Waffle House last night, is out. And so, Cap, who are you trashing?
Well, DA, I have to trash you for this, actually. Uh-huh. I was listening to the PGP coming in today.
Yeah.
And you are interrogating Peter Bellotti.
Yes.
Who does an excellent job on the board. You are interrogating him.
Okay.
For supposedly not eating a sandwich.
Right.
Taking it home with him later. I just felt so bad for him.
You felt bad for Bellotti?
Yes. He clearly didn't do it. I'm totally on his side now.
Clearly.
Wait a second. You and I went through all of the footage last week.
We saw nothing
last
that would say
week.
that he ate the sandwich.
You and I sat down surveillance camera.
Yeah.
And we went through every frame. And now suddenly you're on his side just because you feel bad that I interrogated him?
He convinced me.
During the PGP?
Yes.
Fine, trash me.
Hold your nose. That's some smelly rubbish.
You felt I was too hard under
the
heat lamp?
You kept grilling him. He said, no, I didn't do it. You kept going. So what if he ate a sandwich? Big deal.
Well, okay, so wait a second. That's different. Did I interrogate him unfairly, or do you feel like even if he did it, I should have just laid
off? Both.
I was just trying to get to the truth.
I think both.
You thought I was too hard.
Too hard, and if you didn't eat it, you ate it later. It doesn't matter.
Well, that's this week's PGP, the Permission Granted Podcast.
And that's what PDB wants. He wants to break you down. He wants to play the sad card. And then you get the sympathy and you forgive him for his transgressions.
I've been honest this whole time.
You can check out this week's PGP by going to iTunes or the website daoncbs.com. Look, this one's a bit of a tough one for me to trash because I understand some people are in a bad spot in their lives. I understand that some people don't have a roof over their head. They could be drug addled. They could be going through some really bad stuff. And so I am here to sympathize with that. But yesterday, I get on the subway and there's a bench that is open on the subway. And it's a crowded early morning commute, Monday morning, New York City subway. And I'm like, all right, bench is open. Cool. And I look down and there's rivers of wetness going up and down. And I figure, oh, somebody spilled something. So people don't want to sit over there. It could be wet. I understand that. Okay, well, I'll just stand over here. Then I realize, oh, there's one person on that bench. And that person is sitting up with a blanket over them. They're definitely wet. And I'm like, oh, huh. That person created that river
And I'm now in a car where I am stepping in a river of whatever they created.
Literally urine on my head.
And then I start smelling and realizing, oh, that stench smells like an outhouse. And there are kids stepping in this, and there are adults stepping in this, and then there's me stepping in this, realizing I may as well be stepping into a Wrigley Field bathroom where the trough is overflowing, because it smells like a urine house, and I'm trapped on this car for the next 6 minutes until the next stop, and this is hell on earth. And why can't we just have transit police coming through there going, you know what? You are wet, and you are creating this, and we need you off of this train. And everybody, nobody on this car until we can mop it up. And why are we just living amongst this filth? I sometimes look around in New York City and go, this is the least civilized place in America. This is a third world country. I am stuck in a trapped box with another 75 people stepping in.
Literally urine on my head.
And I can't get off. And there's school kids on here, so I'm sorry. That whole situation needs to be trashed.
Splash Brothers. More like the Trash Brothers.
Get them out. Yeah, there was some splashing going on to that subway car. So, Pete, I have been informed that you have a real doozy here.
Well, this is a great transition from yours to mine.
Uh-huh.
This morning, I am unloading my car, getting ready to come into work to work Taz and the Moose. And as I'm taking out the items out of my car, the trash, the sanitation comes by.
Okay.
And, you know, they're doing their job. But the guy decides to heave all the trash over his head, over my head.
Over my head. Into the garbage.
Into the garbage truck.
Into the truck, so they're throwing garbage over your head into the truck.
Over my head.
Oh, my.
So, of course, the first bag goes and hits the truck and busts open. And on watchda.com, there is a shot of a soup substance. It was a food substance.
Oh, sweetheart, that ain't soup.
That exploded all over my leg.
It looks like a pumpkin chowder, perhaps.
All over my leg, all over my shoe, my jacket, my lunchbox. So I have all this stuff dripping off of me because this incompetent loser decides he doesn't like his job anymore, so he's going to heave-ho all his trash and get me dirty. And of course, he offers a half-hearted apology. I take down the number, and there's going to be a couple calls made this afternoon.
Oh, is that right? I could see that.
Trash Tuesday is fun for everyone.
I mean, what do you think this substance is, Bogish?
It's certainly worse than the stuff Sean drank for a grand from Boomer and Geo.
I mean, if it ain't paint, and it ain't pumpkin chowder.
Well, I mean, it's not one thing. It's from a garbage bag. So it's an amalgamation of things that was inside there that maybe used to be solids. I mean, you should burn all of the things it touched.
It's like a tan brown orange, and it's soupy and thick.
Yeah, it's viscous. I saw it live after the fact, and it was horrible then.
All over the street, all over, everyone's running over this trash. I mean, they didn't even pick it up.
I can smell it right now.
So gross. I feel disgusted. I'm just so disgusted. Wasn't feeling well anyway coming in today, and I have this garbage literally on me. I'm just so tired of it. I'm tired of this incompetence. Work your job and do it right, and don't bother the hell out of me like you did this morning.
You can check out that picture on our watchda.com simulcast.
I give you credit. I would have went home. I would have taken a picture of myself, emailed it to whomever, got back in my car and went home. I would not be sitting here with garbage juice on my leg.
Did you wash it off your pant leg?
I washed it with soap. I used wipes. I used whatever I could that was here that I could use. I had no change of pants, so.
So you drove, or you were on the train all that way with garbage on your pants?
No, this is coming in. I parked my car. I got out of my car
over here
to come in to the building. Awful. I feel like Oscar the Grouch.
I mean, you look like it and smell like one too.
Thank you.
I really think New York City is a third world country. I mean, we just live amongst filth and wretchedness all of the time.
I mean, this one takes the cake. I see Pete every morning, and Pete is normally in some form of like disarray, sullenness when he shows up here
aggravation.
At 5 a.m. So I see him stomping down the street. I might have playfully made a hand gesture towards him. I'm ahead of him. I go in the building. I get the elevator. I'm waiting for him. He comes in. And there's an extra dimension to the anger this morning. And then I see his leg. There's like a puddle of this on the top of his lunchbox.
Ah!
It's on his bag. Oh! And it's not necessary.
You had trash juice leg.
Ugh. Whatever it was. I mean, do your job.
When we come back here on the show, college football with Pete Thamel, Yahoo Sports college football insider, Andrew Bogish has your headline.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Little wet, little drippy, 24/7.
Fat pig.
Fat pig.
Selfish pig.
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 It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Here, Piggy, Piggy. Mraz's Yankees led to slaughter by the Red Sox in the ALDS. The New York Giants slipped sliding away. His beloved Rangers in the middle of a rebuild. It's going to be a long winter for Mraz. Here, Piggy, Piggy. On his way back from Atlanta after watching that debacle last night yet again. Welcome back. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Brand new PGP, permission granted podcast, is out. As Mraz actually joins me on the PGP to discuss how awful apparently it is sleeping in the same hotel room as Jay Berman. So listen to that, as well as an interrogation of Pete the Body Bilotti. His chance to tell his side of the story after Sandwichgate. Available on the Permission Granted Podcast this week on iTunes, other places podcasts are downloaded, and on the website, daoncbs.com. Joining us to discuss a little college football action, a wild weekend and week in the college football realm, is my good friend Pete Thamel, national college football reporter for Yahoo Sports. Mr. Thamel, good morning.
DA, how we doing?
Doing great, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, your old hometown and my hometown is about to host a World Series game tonight. I'm not actually there, but I'm excited, as you know, as a Bostonian. So yeah.
Yes. Now, I was relocated there for business, but you obviously, you live there, yes. And you grew up around in Massachusetts. I mean, when...
Relocated for business, like you were like an accountant.
That's right. Yes.
You went to count widgets.
I was an accountant for sports information, okay, and hot takes. I was an accountant for hot takes.
The calamari, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. When does your city stop winning championships, damn it? My God.
I do think, like, so I lived there in 04. Actually, you know, I was in New York in 04, but I was back after that, and I went back for it. Like, the excitement level for championships now, it's almost like, oh, you know, we're going to all have to stay up late and watch these World Series games. That's really what it is. Oh, are they 8 o'clock? Oh, God. You know, everyone's going to be so tired at work tomorrow. You know?
I know. So we got to take off for another parade, I guess. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now, the kids.
I hope it's not cold at this point.
Right. Right. Yeah. 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 Well, the kids have seen 6 of these. Do we need a 7th? Maybe they should stay in school that day.
Yeah. They could just watch it on YouTube, right? Like.
It's so obnoxious.
We love it. And, you know, the Celtics are struggling out of the gate here, so I think people really see the sky falling.
Yeah, right, yeah. I know. Jeez, tough times right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy. No, it's not easy being a Bostonian these days. I want to ask you about Harbaugh versus D'Antonio and this kind of war of wills. It feels like Harbaugh wants to fight just about everybody in college football. But who did you think was in the right or the wrong in this Michigan State-Michigan thing on Saturday?
You know who's in the right is you and everyone who hosts a sport talk show, because this is like unbelievable fodder. Like, could you have, if you had sat down before that game and said, let's make up a scenario where we can talk about the shenanigans surrounding this game for the next year.
True.
Right? You would come up with Bush League. He accuses D'Antonio of watching and smiling. D'Antonio with that's BS soundbite. I mean, how many times is that going to be played? That's going to be like people's ringtone.
Right.
In the state of Michigan this year. I mean, the whole thing was just completely comically ridiculous.
Like, everything about it was ridiculous. Like, Michigan State released a statement saying they've done their walk for 12 years and they had the time scheduled. And then, I don't know, the Bush thing, you know, doing Earl Weaver impression, you know, chopping up with the back of his cleat, the logo in midfield. I think the whole thing was preposterous. I think kind of everyone lost a little bit in that whole thing. And I do think Harbaugh, after winning, really made his comments very specifically to stoke the fires, because he's sort of the master of, you know, gathering the fury of the news cycle. And when you win, you can kind of get away with that a little bit. So he knew exactly what he was doing in that scenario. The game, by the way, was terrible.
Yeah.
Like, it was just an awful, awful football game. I do think Michigan's very good. I don't think Michigan State is very good, but it was just like kind of like a gross quintessential Big Ten slog. And I can't sit back and say, oh, this guy was right and this guy was wrong. I mean, it was kind of amateur hour all the way around.
That's a good way to put it. It was a Big Ten punt fest. Nobody really looked good coming out of it. Pete Thamel joins us from Yahoo Sports. Elsewhere in the Big Ten, reports of friction between Urban Meyer and administration. Are you buying that?
Nope. I don't ever buy Football Scoop. Sorry.
Okay, why not? Well, why don't you buy the report in general?
Like
forget Football
they don't
Scoop.
Have a good, you know, hit percentage. So I just think that's like the classic thing you do to draw attention. And I mean, look, they've obviously gone through some stuff there, but I don't think there's anything underlying there that's been known to me that's looming right now. I think Ohio State's one of those places when they lose, everything sort of goes crazy. And I kind of saw that aggregated somewhere this morning and rolled my eyes. I sent a couple text messages and people were just like, no, it's, you know, no.
Your story on Mike Leach and his distrust for Pac-12 officiating really was interesting. And there's text messages to back this up. And it reminds me of the distrust that a lot of the SEC has around officiating surrounding Alabama. This idea that the conference protects Alabama and maybe in the Pac-12 the same thing around USC. How much within the Pac-12 or the SEC are those paranoias legitimate?
Well, I think those are two kind of very different questions, right? I think with the Pac-12, what Leach's text messages that we obtained through public records requests were clearly a culmination of years of frustration, right? And he'd clearly hit a boiling point. Now, certainly this is Mike Leach. He's a noted conspiracy theorist and always kind of has beat to his own drum. But, you know, that Porter Gustin no-call has haunted the Pac-12 since they whiffed on it. And their inability to handle the messaging of it, A, call it right, B, it's literally haunted their whole season. If they had called that, there's a very good chance Washington State's in first, undefeated in the top six or seven and, you know, in the playoff talk right now, because it would have given Washington State essentially first and goal from the 10 with about 2 minutes left in that game. Instead, they missed a 38-yard field goal, got it blocked, and lost by 3 points. And so I just really think that what that missed call has done is it's allowed some feelings of ill will to manifest themselves in that league. And Alabama, like, are you talking about the Carville thing, D.A.?
Yeah, and in general, this kind of idea that the SEC has always kind of put Alabama in advantageous situations at the expense of other teams of the conference.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, you know, going back to the Pac-12, like, that's why you don't have a conference official with a voice in your replay room. You know, so the guy with business in his title, right? Like, you don't have that. And that's what the Pac-12 had. Now they claim they changed their policies and they don't have that anymore. But that's wrong. That's sort of that's the type of action that leads fans to, you know, go down that conspiracy road. So the call on the LSU linebacker was not a great call. You know, it wasn't perfect. Like, it looked like he led with his hands. It didn't look like a classic targeting, but, like, I don't know, like, targeting in college is like a catch in the NFL. Like, nobody really knows what it is. Like, you know, after we wrote the first Pac-12 story a couple weeks ago, people, coaches, et cetera, start sending me these clips of these targetings. And it's like, wait a minute, they didn't call that. They didn't call that. Like, so I don't know. Like, I don't tend on, I, I just think that was a missed call, and at least it was made. It was missed on the side of player safety, right? Like the Pac-12 missed call, the glaring one. I mean, the guy practically, Gardner Minshew probably practically got decapitated. Like his dad was like worried watching the game at home. I interviewed him. I interviewed him after. Like this one, okay, like. You know what? Like upon further review, they, you know, maybe they should have not made a target. I mean, you can't do anything after. So I don't know. There was this drumbeat from the media in Louisiana where, you know, the AD there, Oliva, is going to call the office and get it fixed. But you can't. You can't fix it after. You can't change it after. So I think it would be a conspiracy of some kind if they did change the rules to get the kid to play. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I guess I've been around. I think I'm like too jaded for conspiracy theories sometimes, but. Look, it looked like a bad call, and those and look, bad calls happen.
Cocktail party this week, Florida, Georgia. Do you believe the winner of this game could beat the winner of Alabama, LSU in Atlanta?
Well, Florida beat LSU, so if that was the scenario,
true.
Sure. I don't think anyone's beating Alabama, Damon. It's hard to envision right now. Now, look, Alabama hasn't been tested. They haven't had, like, a third and two late in the third quarter in a one-score game that they've needed to convert. Like, they just simply haven't had tension in, you know, at any point. So, hopefully what this LSU game does is we get to learn a little bit about Alabama when it's nut-cutting time, right? Like, we haven't seen that yet. With this Alabama team. I mean, Tua's been remarkable. What's he going to do, you know, when, you know, like Grant Delpit or, you know, Greedy Williams comes on a corner blitz and gets in his grill? How is he going to react when he gets hit? I mean, his numbers, his efficiency, he may be having the best season of any quarterback since the time I started covering national colleges in the last 15 years. Like, it's remarkable. But that said, like, he hasn't truly been tested in a tense situation.
I mean, he hasn't played a fourth quarter.
What was that?
He hasn't played a fourth quarter.
And you know, it was interesting going into this year with Tua because he obviously saved them in the national title game and made that dynamic throw. But, like, he didn't play great in that game. Like, if you really go back and you remember the second half of that title game, he took a terrible sack. He was, you know, a young quarterback, you know, and obviously it ended up working out. But I was a little skeptical coming in because I had seen his very small body of work in front of us, and it wasn't perfect. But he's pretty much been perfect this year. And, it's almost a little bit like this weekend is like, let's fast forward to November 3rd and see what LSU has for them in Baton Rouge.
Pete Thamel joins us from Yahoo Sports here on CBS Sports Radio. So would the playoff committee take a 12-1 Oklahoma or a 12-1 Ohio State?
That's a really good question. I honestly, and I wrote this Saturday, I don't think Ohio State's that good. I really don't. Like, they have looked, you know, the teams they've struggled against now, when you look back, like, they were just okay against Minnesota, just okay against Indiana, should have probably lost to Penn State by all conceivable metrics, and TCU gave them a run. Well, those teams aren't very good, and they've played down to all their levels, and they basically have one competent safety and a linebacking crew that's been MIA most of the year. And, you know, God bless Jeff Brohm. He's, you know, the kind of the next genius play caller that we've seen come through. He exposed every single one of their weaknesses with highlighter and glaring. And it was just, he could not have called a better game in terms of attacking what they don't do well. So I would think, you know, Oklahoma's out of conference win, UCLA. I guess the Bruins are on a roll now because they've won two in a row, and good for Chip Kelly. I never had any doubt that he'd figure it out there. But that hurts them because you scheduled that game 5 years ago. You think it's a top 25 game, and it ends up, you know, UCLA in all likelihood isn't going to be a bowl team. So Ohio State has a pretty good out of conference win. You know, there's something said for going to challenge yourself, and certainly they both tried to do that on paper. So, no, I mean, That would be pretty interesting. I do think the momentum of beating Michigan, if Ohio State does that, and then do you have, like, I really almost feel like last year, if they had had a blowout win in that conference title game, they might have been looked at in a little different light, like they were the Cardale Jones year. So, and then Oklahoma's going to have a chance against Texas. And I think Texas, Tom Herman's obviously done a good job there. I don't think Texas is, like, in the same conversation talent-wise, Damon, as maybe, you know, the Clemsons and obviously not Alabama. And I just think Texas is like to be – Texas is a year or two away from really being a true playoff team talent-wise. Tom's done a good job squeezing out of them what he can, but I still think there's a ways to go there before they're in that conversation.
Pete Thamel, national college football writer for Yahoo Sports, joining us this morning on the show. Check out his piece about Washington State's Mike Leach and the text messages that they were able to acquire about controversial officiating in the Pac-12 and after the USC game by going to yahoosports.com right now. It's a really, really interesting piece for college football fans. It's at yahoosports.com right now. Pete, it's always good, brother. Thanks so much. Try to get some sleep in the middle of this championship run for the Sox.
DA, thank you. We'll try. It's not easy. If you ever get relocated up there for work, let me know.
Okay. Thanks, bud.
Thanks.
All right. Our toll-free line brought to you by GEICO. Everyone, there's a quick way you could save money switching to GEICO. Need homeowners, renters, or motorcycle insurance, too. Get it all. GEICO.com. I tend to agree on Ohio State, especially after the loss of Nick Bosa. Defensively, they have so many vulnerabilities, and Purdue exposed every single one of them. And Ohio State is built right now like a Big 12 team. So it's funny to ask, is it Ohio State or is it Oklahoma if they're both 12-1? Because Ohio State might as well play in the Big 12. They can score with anybody, really good quarterbacking, but can't stop anybody. I think they would take Ohio State, though, for the reasons that Pete mentioned and just overall respect for the Big 10 over the Big 12. When we come back, more on Urban Meyer.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.